People rejoice, for we have in studio two parts of one of Britain's finest and most enduring musical beat groups who have just gilded their lily, pulled it out of the bag, and managed to mint another fresh batch of fabulous tunes hot out of the oven. I'm talking about their latest album, Living in Extraordinary Times. It's Saul Davies and Tim Booth from James. Hello, guys.
Good morning.
How do we follow that?
I know. Okay. You might as well go home, innit?
Yep. See ya.
Might as well go home. Congratulations on... What is this, your 15th studio record now?
We are told that. We don't remember, of course, but we are told something like that.
In the scheme of things, you're relatively young men. I mean, luckily, 30 years ago, we were all watching some Rolling Stones 25 years documentary, watching them writing and recording Steel Wheels and going, look at these ancient swines. Yeah, yeah. When are they going to give it up? And of course, nobody ever does, because that's... Music, if music's in your blood, you're going to do it till you drop, aren't you? Mm. That's a kind of rhetorical question, but is that something that you
well,
would
there,
do?
There is a point, a real point about this, which is all the pioneers, the people who made rock and roll. Okay, some of them are gone, obviously, but some of them, like the Stones, are still around. And there was no blueprint for when anybody was going to finish, because they were the first people to do it. So we are still part, actually, almost of the first wave of rock and roll, in a way. You know what I mean? Like, when, I don't know, when do you stop? You stop when you die, don't
you?
It looks like that. I mean, you know, it doesn't mean, it's not an automatic thing that people are going to do great work, is it? You know, just, but certainly we seem somehow to manage to maintain some kind of level that is at least interesting to ourselves. You know, we're making our records for ourselves. That's why we do it. It's great though that people get it. I mean, it's a miracle really that anybody else gets it, to be honest. But because we try to make records as willful as we possibly can, but they seem to be appealing to people. So yeah, why would we stop? You know, I mean,
that's the point that I'm trying to grope towards, which is you've never been a greatest hits band, have you? You know, all the times that we've ever seen you play live, or you know, when you present a record, it's never been with the feeling of, well, let's just knock out the hits. You know, you're always bringing something new to it.
Hits, when we had hits in those days, they kind of fall upon us accidentally. And then there's a redefinition of the word hit now anyway for a band our age, because you can't get played on Radio 1 or blah, blah, blah. So Nothing But Love was a hit for us. It did really well for us, and Moving On was a hit for us in many ways. But when you have hits, they're completely accidents for us.
Yeah.
We jam lots of songs, and every so often somebody drops something on our lap and we go, oh, look at this. This looks a little bit different to the other children. It has blue eyes and it's blonde and it looks like it could be a bruiser. And walk into a radio station and get played, you know. And it's totally accidental. We haven't got a clue what a hit is. Often it's like we make an album and then our management or a record company say, that one's a hit.
Yeah.
I mean, every so often we go, isn't that one a hit? And they kind of go, yeah, maybe in 1993.
I mean, looking at, just to bring it right up to the present, you know, a song like, because this album lyrically, Tim, you've talked about it a bit with people, you can't create art at the moment, especially with words, that isn't in some way reflecting the things that are going on at the moment. About a song like Many Faces it's ostensibly an anthem of togetherness, isn't it? You know, tell us a little bit about what informed the record lyrically, as far as you're concerned.
Lyrically, I was writing these songs when Trump was coming into power and got into power, and I live in America, so it was pretty devastating. And I write from the unconscious very much. You know, I write at like 4 a.m. in the morning when I wake up with lyrics. And when we improvise the initial songs, I'll often get some lyrics. And he was sneaking into the record all over the place.
But you didn't want him there, either,
I didn't
did
want
you?
Him there. So I kind of banished him to about two songs in particular. It seems to me that that's one of the divides, is we have a choice. We either look at people and we see our similarities, or we look at people and we see that we're all the same underneath it all. And It's the looking at people and seeing their differences and whoa, that's caused thousands of years of tribal wars, essentially, and will destroy us because we have now the capability in the last, you know, 70 years to destroy ourselves quite easily. If we don't master it, if we don't transcend it, if we don't raise our level of consciousness and perception of seeing other people as the same as us. And so, yeah, he sneaked into the album, but only on like really two songs, directly political songs. I don't like political songs, really. I've written about 8 in my life. And out of 250, I think. So, and he's only 2 on out of...
Yeah.
This is really a double album, too. If you get the... If you get the full thing, it's 20 tracks. Yeah. We saw this as potentially a double album, but double albums are pretty hard to get past your record company because they don't make more money than single albums. But there's 20 strong tracks, including the EP, that you can listen to, and we're very proud of this body of work.
It's beautiful, really. I mean, often we think of James or a really established band like you, we just think of you as an entity, as like a sort of... a hydra-headed beast, you know. But if we, just to break each personality down a little bit for us, what would you say in a couple of sentences?
The rest of them haven't got any personality.
That's why you're here and they're not.
I can't remember what the rest of them are called. There's so many of them. Right?
Saul's the jester. Mark is the completely silent type. But hero, he's kind of almost Clint Eastwood. He comes in and rescues everything, really, in many ways. Jimmy holds the whole thing together, and also has a good sense of humour. Mm-hmm. And I'm the cosmic lunatic, definitely, amongst other things.
That's nice though, because you spend so much time with the band, but the music, but you don't always think about all that stuff, you know.
Andy is also, he's like another jester in a certain kind of way, but very political. Dave is kind of silent and at the back and doing his thing, and then we have a young woman called Debbie who's with us at the moment, who is soon to depart, actually, unfortunately, but her best friend is stepping in, which is going to be interesting.
It's all about dynamics with bands, I guess.
Well, I think we have a core of 7, and then there's, you know. Then we need someone else. Yeah. And Ron, who was that person for quite a few years, he's become a single parent. Right. Well, not a single parent. He's bringing up his kid while his wife works.
Yeah, yeah.
And so he's a house husband, I think is the technical term.
So he can't really go around the world with you guys for a little while.
He can't travel with us at all. So, yeah.
I should ask you about this, so, because if my intel is correct, you're a sort of slight a later interloper. It was sort of more Gold Mother style time.
89,
89.
3rd of March, 1989. There
you go. As you would.
A date indelibly etched clearly into what's left of my brain.
But you're like the Ken Barlow of James, aren't you? Because you were kind of expecting to stay just for a little while, probably, weren't
you? Do you know something? I was really reluctant. I mean, it was initially really exciting but I'm not quite sure I really liked it, really. And I'm not sure I really liked the music. And I didn't really quite understand what I was doing there. And I don't think this lot really understood what I was doing there anyway. And probably we got very close to parting ways several times. But then things changed and my understanding of what we were doing changed fundamentally. And then working with Brian, when we did Laid and Wawa...
Yeah.
Brian found me challenging, you know...
How to use you in the sound of James.
But the whole thing, you know, and actually...
he did ask that question.
Oh, no, I know. He spoke to me about it, and we,
you know... And then he worked it out. He said, every band needs a Saul Davis, he said.
Yeah. God!
And I'm not sure, sometimes, you know, and I've grown up a lot now, and probably grown up a lot musically, and it's a bit annoying, really, that process takes place, because being spiky and difficult to place is quite useful in some ways. You know,
that's very oblique strategies, isn't it?
Yeah.
Having a soul is very oblique.
Honour thy soul as a hidden
Well, it's
taxi driver.
You reminded me a little bit of the solar system, and they say that, what's that planet X that allegedly exists yeah. that's on a different plane altogether, that just on a, you know, that sort of comes in every few thousand years and disrupts stuff, you know.
Well, that could be Uranus, I think.
We're back to Preparation H. I knew we'd get there in the end.
It's the planet of disruption. I've just been cosmic. I wasn't being lewd.
Well, we touched on Brian there, but also just quickly I wanted to mention about Coming Home Part 2, which is lyrically it's a centerpiece as well because of how honest it is. And you were talking about band members becoming house husbands and things, but I just wanted to touch on a little bit because you worked with Brian on that track, didn't you?
Yeah, this was prepared actually for the last album and we couldn't nail it, and I went to Brian and went, Brian, we're stuck on this song, and he put these bizarre squiggles and blippity blots on it, and we tried to integrate it on the last album. We failed miserably, and then Charlie really managed to integrate it all on this record.
It's great. It's a beautiful song, and one of the things that makes it is the candor of the lyric, because you do talk about how the downside of, because I know what successful musicians are like. They don't want to go on about the crap bits because it's like nobody wants to hear that. It's like, you've got a great life, but there's hard parts. What was it like to the genesis of that lyric? What was the moment? Was it a sort of rainy hotel room in Michigan or something? You know, as I'm imagining it.
Well, I write from my unconscious, so I wrote that lyric. And was then quite surprised and then kept following it. And you kind of follow it. It's like, you go, oh, this song seems to want to be about this. And then at the end of it, I realized I'd written a sequel to Come Home, yeah. really. And so asked if we could call it Coming Home Part 2, because musicians don't do sequels. Mm. It's like films, books, everyone does sequels. Because I write from my unconscious, I often discover things about myself that I didn't know. So I didn't know I was that upset. I was a bit in denial. I'm good at compartmentalizing emotions. I mean, I think you have to be to travel and be away a lot. I'm good at being in the now, wherever I am, being in the now, because you have to be. Yeah. And my son, aged 4, he would pretend to me he was okay with me going away, and he was protecting me emotionally. Yeah.
Kids do that, don't they? They protect the parents.
Terrible. And it took me a year or two to clock on that my kid was that clever. And it was basically when I came back after an 8-week stint. Normally I'm only away 3, and he, you know, burst into tears and threw himself into my arms. And I realized he'd been lying to me the whole time to protect me, to make me not feel bad. And so when I wrote this lyric and sang it and then got to sing it, then I got emotional. Yeah. That's when, oh, okay, I'm all upset by this. And then when I did the video, it was even worse. It was like, you know, I just let it all come out in the video.
I haven't seen the video yet.
The video is me weeping for about 3.5 minutes. Or trying to hold that line between crying and being able to just about do the thing you're meant to be doing with the cameras on you. And, you know, because me and him are pretty inseparable. And my wife goes away a lot too. She has to travel for her work. And so he has time with me where it's just me and him for three weeks, many times a year. Mm. And so we're really close.
So it just makes it all the more painful when you're not.
All the more painful. But, and hey, you know, that's, and you know, I'm doing my calling. I'm doing the job I love too. And yeah, as you say, it's like, I don't complain. It was more like an unconscious, oh, by the way, you're a bit more in denial about how you feel about this than you're letting on.
This is something people have to confront, isn't it? A lot of time, you know, there's lots of people who go through this.
Yeah. It's a necessity, isn't it, in the modern world, really?
Well, yeah.
In California, you meet everyone has nannies, and we don't, but everyone around us. And you talk to the nannies from El Salvador, and they haven't seen their kids in 10 years because they've come to America to make money that they send home to their kids so that they can have a proper education. And a lot of the South Americans trying to get into America are economical migrants from oppressive regimes and oppressive economics. And most of them, a lot of them have had to leave their families behind. I mean, it's, you know, that's when it really hurts.
Yeah. And that's when you realize how lucky we are to...
Yeah, because they can't go back, because if they go back, they'll never get back into America again, too.
The other side of this for me is I've got both of my kids at home with me. Their mum lives abroad. So, That causes me some particular issues because, you know, being they're there at the moment. But soon. That'll be in a
few days. How old are you?
Vinny's 16. And Mia's 11, so that's quite hardcore. Yeah. You know, they have to come with me quite a lot of time. Mia will be coming to Australia and New Zealand, and she doesn't let me forget Dubai and South Africa, Dad, in November. But her school, where we live, very rurally up in the northwest coast of Scotland, her school's only got 18 kids in it. So the whole school's only got 18 kids. So everybody, that's like a big mad bundle of ferrets, those kids together, like a mad family, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But that also means that I'm allowed to take. Yeah. So she comes with me on a lot of things. That's another way of dealing with these kinds of issues. But again, totally privileged situation. Yeah. Most dads or mum or whatever who might find themselves alone with their children for whatever reason don't get to take their kids to work every day. Or why would you want your kid at work with you? It might not be an appropriate environment.
God, I brought my kids in here and they're like, I'm so bored, when can we leave? And I can understand that.
Yeah, I mean, Mia gets that. You know, she's like, Dad.
I was going to ask what your kids like when they come.
She's a big fan of the B-sides, my daughter.
Is she?
You know, yeah. You're not playing Sit Down, are you? No, we're not playing Sit Down. Oh, good, thank God. You know, that kind of thing.
They're always our harshest critics, let's be honest, aren't they?
Yeah.
It's a great, it's a lovely record. It's quite remarkable. It's lovely to see bands doing some of the strongest material in the next phase of their career, let's say, you know. But then again,
it gives you hope, doesn't it?
It gives me hope to get that solo album off the floor finally, you know. But you know, it's like you look at somebody like Bobby Dylan, who's still, you know, he's still vital and he's still knocking it out, and he's got a good 25, 30 years on you guys. So
Leonard Cohen doing his like last song before he died. I mean, what an amazing song that is too. Those are the inspirations.
Bowie did one of his best records.
Yeah.
So
we've got time yet. It's lovely. It's available now. You can buy, you can stream, Living in Extraordinary Times. And also you're going to be doing some pretty big shows towards the end of the year, aren't you?
Yeah, we're playing arenas with the Charlatans.
Oh, some of my favourite boys.
The wonderful Charlatans. They,
I mean, what a night that's going to be. So the 5th Glasgow SSE Hydro, 7th London SSE Arena, Wembley, Manchester Arena on Saturday the 8th, and Sunday the 9th of December, Leeds First Direct Arena. Yeah. And then you've got some dates as well, Electric Fields. Obviously, whenever you get anywhere in a room with James, there's this reciprocity that we all thoroughly enjoy, this electricity, and it's still flowing very, very strongly, AC and DC. Saul and Tim, thank you so much for coming in. Can I just ask you, what song off the album should we close with?
Close with Heads.
Right.
It's the most exciting song on the record in that it doesn't sound like James at all in many ways, and it's got amazing drums to it.
Saul and Tim, thank you very much.
Thanks,
Sean. Thank you, Sean.
Sorry, that is definitely my fault. I do apologise. I've pressed the wrong button and now I'm pressing the right button. You turned out too badly.
take back.